we'll try to speak loudly and clearly so people in the back can follow. It's very nice to be here today. This is our first meeting outstate. We had a meeting a couple months ago already in Rochester. But today and next week, we're starting the process of going over the Minsky bonding request. And we thought it would be a good opportunity to do it at some of the campuses which are requesting some funding for bonding. So that brings us here today. And Representative Anderson, it's nice to be in your area. I don't know if you have any remarks you'd like to make when we begin this.
Thank you, Chairman Stang, and members of the committee, and thank you all for being here in Austin. Welcome to my alma mater, Riverland Community College, and 1988 graduate of this institution, and glad that Chancellor McCormick could be here to present the Minsky bonding request. I hope you enjoy your stay in Austin, and thanks for coming.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Representative Doug Stang from Cold Spring. I think we'll go around and introduce ourselves. Most of the faces look pretty familiar in the audience, but there are some new faces as well, so why don't we go around the table and introduce ourselves. Before we begin, I recognize we had some staff changes for the committee. Mike Miller now is our committee administrator, and Chris Thompson is our new committee legislative assistant. So they will be assisting us this upcoming session. But Mike, why don't you start?
Oh, I'm Mike Miller, I'm committee administrator.
Doug Berg, I'm fiscal staff for the committee.
Very great. I'm Lynn Carlson, state representative. I represent the cities of Robbinsdale, Crystal, part of Golden Valley. Being that I'm in Austin, I should footnote something. I don't know how many in the audience are from Austin, but the very earliest settlers of Austin were relatives of mine. My great-great-grandfather settled here so long ago I couldn't even give you a date. My mother was born here, so that would show how many generations resided in the town of Austin. Just come down here a lot when I was a kid, and my grandmother was still alive, and I would accompany her down here to visit different relatives. So always enjoyed the community.
I'm Ron Latz, represent parts of St. Louis Park and Golden Valley, first-ring communities in the metro area next to Minneapolis. And I'm glad to be here, but I have no connection to Austin whatsoever.
You don't need spam?
I played in the Spam Spam Dixieland band in high school.
I'm Phil
Reyes.
I'm the Republican staff.
I'm Nancy Family D.
I'm John Dorn, representative from Van Giel.
And I'm State Representative Ray Cox from Northfield. And I don't have any great connections to Austin other than eating a lot of spam when I was a little also.
I'm Representative Bob Norris from Curtis Falls. And I do have a connection. My daughter lived here at college for a while. And my great-grandfather is from Albert Lee, and he served in the legislature when the Capitol was brand new. So that's close.
I'm Kathy Novak. I'm with the Hospice Department staff director.
And I'm Chris Thompson, new committee legislative assistant.
We also, I believe, Representative Nelson from Rochester will be joining us shortly as well. So, yes, I appreciate all the members being able to come down here. I know it's a little bit of a hike from some of your homes, but I think it's important that we get out here as well and are able to do some of these meetings outside of the Capitol. Gives us a good opportunity to see the projects for ourselves. We are going to be, as I mentioned, we will be spending time today. We have a room until 4. We'll wrap up at 4, and then we will be picking up again next Tuesday at Century College in White Bear Lake. When session begins, we'll probably take some opportunity to come back and just do a quick and more condensed overview of Minsky's requests for all the committee members that weren't able to be here. There's only a couple that were not able to make it today, so that we're very fortunate in that. So with that, I will turn it over to you. Thank you for your willingness to testify here today.
Thank you so much, Chair Stang and committee members. I want to thank you for coming and holding your hearing on one of our campuses. I think we'd like to ask Terry Leese, the president, to say a brief word of welcome.
Yes, welcome to the committee and to all the other guests and visitors. It's an honor to have the committee here today. And of course, Chris, you appreciate the good weather that you arranged for your trip.
Thank you.
Chair Stang, for the record, my name is Jim McCormick, and I'm serving as the Chancellor of the Minnesota State College and University System. And here at the table with me is Jim Loma, the Chair of the Board of Trustees. And we appreciate the opportunity to talk with the committee today about our capital budget projects and requests. I'd like to acknowledge also several of our college and university presidents who are here today, and I think I'll just ask them very quickly to stand, and I appreciate the good attendance. The Anoka Technical College, Ann Wyatt. Central Lakes College, Joe Birmingham. Lake Superior College, Kathy Nelson. The Minnesota State College Southeast Tech, Jim Johnson. North Hennepin Community College, Ann Winia. Northeast Higher Education District, Joe Sertich. The Ridgewater College, Doug Allen. Riverland Community College, of course, Terry Leese. Rochester Community and Technical College, Don Sapala. St. Cloud Technical College, Joan Volkmuth. St. Paul College, Donovan Swichtenberg. And the Southwest Minnesota State University, David Danapar. And so we're pleased to have them. There's several presidents that are not able to attend today, and we have their vice presidents, the individuals in charge of facilities, and that could be here as well in case we have any questions. Now, before I really begin, I'd like to ask Chair Loma to say a few words to the committee about the board's role in determining the system's capital budget requests, because they have truly been involved in helping make cuts and then advocating the highest priorities. Chair Loma.
Thank you. I am Jim Loma, the Chair of the Board of Trustees for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and I'm pleased to be here. Chair Stain and committee members representing our board. I really believe that the request we are presenting today represents an investment in our future for Minnesota. In order to maintain the state's competitive edge and protect the investment that state taxpayers have made in the state colleges and universities, our facilities must be safe, well cared for, and up to date as possible. Our board takes very seriously our responsibility to be good stewards of our existing assets and to protect the previous investments made by our state taxpayers. This request is a culmination of a very thoughtful and strategic process that began a year and a half ago. In July of 2002, the board established criteria for ranking the projects that would get to this point of being proposed. Each proposal was reviewed by technical teams representing the colleges and universities. Discussions were conducted on the campuses with students, faculty, and staff. Three public hearings were conducted to receive public input. They were held at Granite Falls, St. Paul, and Bemidji. The final list was unanimously approved by the board in June 2003. We felt that this was a very good process that resulted in a list of projects ranked in priority order. As you can see, we trimmed the amount of the request by about 45%. This $274.9 million request will benefit students throughout our system, will protect the state's investment, and enable us to expand our capacity to educate people for healthcare and science careers. Now, I'd like to turn this back to the Chancellor.
Thank you very much, Chair Loma, Mr. Chair, committee members. I want you to know that the board, the governing board, took a very active role in shaping the list of projects. They attended hearings where presentations were made by every campus. They asked hard questions. I personally have driven the entire state and looked at each of the projects on our list, and on the vast majority of these visits, I had one or two trustees along with me. So our board members have committed a significant amount of time and understanding to the review of the projects, approving the final list, and of course making the decision about the ones that were not included. Now, Mr. Chairman, I would like to thank you and the members for the time you have spent looking at these projects. I know you have visited individually or in small groups a number of the campuses and looked at the projects, and we know that your presence, your taking the time to be with the on the campus is appreciated by our students and faculty and the community. Your work in traveling the state, going from Bemidji to Winona, to get a better understanding of the needs of our students is a fine reflection on your commitment to public service and serving the people of Minnesota. Now, for the benefit of the committee, especially the relatively new members, I'd like to begin by giving a very brief overview of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. We are a diverse network of 32 colleges and universities committed to meeting the needs. The only reason we exist is to meet the needs of the citizens of Minnesota. We are the largest provider of higher education, providing access to higher education opportunities at 53 locations and in 46 communities throughout the state. Now this year, we are at record student enrollments, as we're indicating on the chart. We've had five consecutive years of significant enrollment growth, and you can see from the chart, which shows our full year equivalent enrollment for the past 14 years as well. By the way, we are aware that some of this has to do with the economy and some students coming back and part-time students, and we know that's contributed. But we also think that this growth indicates a strong confidence in the quality and affordability of our colleges and university, and the recognition that we have the kinds of programs that produce the kinds of people that Minnesota needs. But you can sense that this is putting a strain on facilities throughout the system. The lack of up-to-date laboratories and classrooms is hampering our capacity to expand programs in areas of critical need, such as nursing and science careers. And you will see that a lot of this activity and investment is in the area of laboratories and getting us ready to do that foundational work, which we need so much. I would also like to point out that protecting the public's investment, the physical assets that the taxpayers have provided, is also an important priority. And rather than new buildings, three-fourths of this year's request is for renovation of existing spaces, with the rest being new construction. So, as you can see, we are investing in bringing up to date, retrofitting, and getting our facilities ready to serve changing and new needs. I would also, this is a very important point, and I want it to come out, you know, in our later discussion. You will see on a later slide that our investments are in the area where the population is growing and demand for services are increasing. And you will find that that consideration was very much in the overall consideration of this proposal, which we are going to, which we are making to you. Now, to put our enrollment in perspective, our system serves more than two-thirds, 67% of Minnesota undergraduates, followed by the University of Minnesota at 15%, private colleges at 14.6%, and private career schools at 3.1%. Now, I would like to turn the presentation over to Al Johnson, who is the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities, for more details on the projects. And I would like to assure you, Mr. Chair, that Chair Loma and I intend to stay very involved and very accountable for the presentation and to be available for questions as we move on. I think I'd still like to just then make an additional compliment to our process. I have been in system work and college leadership, university leadership for a long time, and I had nothing to do with recruiting Al Johnson to this position. But I want to tell you that he and his staff, in my opinion, and I think I can have some objective assessment, is outstanding. And he and his staff are able to work with the colleges and universities, do the analysis, and present the kinds of alternatives for the board and the senior officers of the institution to consider. And I just want you to know that I believe we have a great individual heading up this part of our leadership for the people of Minnesota through the system. So with that, I'd like to present Al Johnson.
Thank you, Chancellor.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chancellor. The Chancellor got me all flustered here. So Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. For the record, I'm Alan Johnson. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. In addition to the handout that you have on the slide presentation, I'll be referring from time to time to our bonding book, which you also have, which provides a great deal more detail in a very succinct manner for our bonding requests. The Minnesota State Colleges and Universities has stewardship responsibility over one-third of the state's investment in capital resources at our 53 campus sites. That's about 24 million square feet. 20 million square feet of that is in academic buildings, and about 4 million square feet in residence halls. Our inventory currently is more than 800 buildings that average over 32 years of age. You would probably not see 800 buildings if you went around campus to campus, because many of our buildings are indeed additions and additions and additions to the original building. So to the eye, it counts about 400 buildings, actual building structures with about 287 acres of roof space. Many of our buildings date to the early 1900s, but a system-wide average is about 32. And at 32 years of age, I think you can appreciate that much of the physical plant is worn out. It's worn out its first roof. It's worn out its second roof. Heating, ventilating, and air conditioning systems have become obsolete and require upgrading, and many spaces are not up to current codes and life safety issues. As you've heard from our chairman of our Board of Trustees, the board has placed a high priority on our facilities and has indicated to us at the college and university level and the system office that we are to be good stewards of the physical plant that the people of Minnesota have entrusted to us. Our buildings serve as a community resource, and often it's the only state building available to the public in some locations. We serve as meeting places, locations for local athletic events, shelters in storms and times of floods and other emergencies. The funding for the upkeep and the renewal of facilities in the Minnesota State College and University system comes from really only two major sources. The operating budget includes a very small amount for annual repairs and maintenance, but it is far from sufficient to handle the major requirements of capital construction and renovation. And thus we rely heavily on your support through the capital budget process to ensure that our campuses are safe, up to date, and present a conducive learning environment. By way of debt service, for several years, we have been a partner in the capital bonding process by financing one-third debt service assigned to capital projects. That one-third is split between the system as a whole and the particular college or university that benefits from the capital project, having assigned one-sixth of the debt service. As Trustee Loma indicated in his opening remarks, the budget process began in July of 2002 when the board adopted the capital budget guidelines. The guidelines are firmly grounded in the system's strategic plan, which is entitled Designing the Future. And I know we distributed the strategic plan last session, and we have several copies of that available here as well. If you did not get a copy, we'll leave some with Mr. Miller and Mr. Thompson, that extra copies for you. The strategic plan provides clear direction in the guiding principles, focusing on students, ensuring the success of Minnesota communities and indeed the entire state, and stewardship of our resources, both physical plant, fiscal resources, faculty, staff, and students. These budget guidelines fully embrace strategic directions that are contained in the strategic plan as well, to increase access and opportunity, to expand high-quality learning programs and services to strengthen community development and the economic vitality of the state, and all the while more fully integrating our system of colleges and universities. The guidelines go on to give us guidance as to how we should evaluate projects as they are prepared and submitted to us. They focus on a variety of issues. First and foremost, projects that appear in the budget must be grounded in the academic mission of the college or the university. This year, the board gave us specific direction to improve the learning environments for sciences, technology, workforce training, and student services. Projects that received board or legislative support in the past should rank high in the review process. A project must be supported by the campus long-range facilities master plan, and a pre-design should be preferably completed by the time the capital budget is prepared, which fully defines the scope, the alternatives, the costs, and the schedules of the individual projects. Capital projects, whether they're new or remodeling, should present a collegiate environment to students, staff, and the public. And finally, they should reflect campus space conditions to encourage the full and efficient use of space. Other capital guidelines that were sprung from the strategic plan include stewardship, looking at the infrastructure of campuses to ensure that utilities, mechanical systems are adequate to support projects. Institutions should strive to collaborate with other partners in funding of construction. And finally, the campus operating budgets must demonstrate the ability to operate new square footage or remodel square footage and take on new debt service. The guidelines further prescribe how individual projects get evaluated. And that's through a project scoring system that started out in December of 2002 when we formed technical advisory teams that met in St. Cloud to evaluate all 68 projects that were proposed for 2004. The teams were a diverse combination of at least four campus individuals per team, plus Officer of the Chancellor personnel. And then for the 2004 budget, we had a total of 48 individuals on six separate teams with personnel from across all regions and all institution types. The projects were first scored solely based on the merits and from what those teams could evaluate by reviewing the projects and the board criteria. The individual teams judged the projects independently. There was no direct connection to the board or the chancellor at that point in the process. Each project was scored at least twice, sometimes three times. A detailed scoring mechanism was put together that reflected the guidelines and the strategic plan. In addition to the board's guidelines and the criteria, we also consider the priorities that have been provided by the legislature and statute. Maintenance, preservation of existing facilities, continued funding on phased projects, updating facilities to meet contemporary needs, and maximizing non-state dollars. These were all directly reflected in the guidelines and in the project scoring mechanism. The geographic distribution of projects is analyzed later in the process and occurs when we are finally assembling the list, and I'll show you a slide to that effect in a little while here.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask Representative Carroll's question? The technical advisory teams, they actually do campus site visits?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, they did not do specific visits in connection with the process. But assembled all together in St. Cloud were representatives from all the campuses, so there was quite a bit of sharing of information and questions and answers among the teams.
Thank you.
The project evaluation process continued even after the scoring mechanism. Our staff continued to analyze projects, continued dialogue with campuses. The Board of Trustees held three public hearings at Granite Falls, Bemidji, and St. Paul. This gave the opportunity for presidents and other stakeholders to describe their needs for their particular project. In May, a preliminary priority list was developed and it was distributed to all the college and university presidents for further discussion with the chancellor, the chancellor's cabinet, and the what is known as the Leadership Council, which is a council made up of all presidents and senior vice chancellors of the system. And then with the support of the presidents, the chancellor submitted the capital budget to the board in June of 2003. The results of that process then are shown here. Our challenge has been similar to that of the legislature in that we have far more needs and far more requests than the capacity or ability to fund. Through the reasonable guideline approach and the collaborative process that we've gone through, we've created a foundation here, I believe, for the growth of higher education and workforce training throughout the state. You see that the budget that is before you is made up of $175 million in specific line item projects and $100 million in major repair and replacement for the Higher Education Asset Preservation and Replacement Program, HEPR, for a $275 million total. In this slide, you'll see that renovation, which is the blue line, of existing facilities far exceeds the requirement for adding new space. Over 900,000 square feet of existing space will be modernized and enhanced in this budget proposal. Only 300,000 square feet of new space is proposed. That equates to about $105 million in reinvestment in existing state-owned facilities, about $60 million for investment in new spaces within the $175 million of line item projects. A further breakdown here of that $105 million in line item projects and the 930,000 square feet, you'll see it's a major focus on the sciences with work at 22 campuses, classroom technology, applied labs, and trades improvements at 21 campuses of $44 million, learning centers, student services at 8 campuses of $14.5 million. That sums to 105.3, and the other major piece of that in terms of reinvestment in existing space would be our request for HEPR at all 53 campuses amounting to $100 million. First of all, investment in new space is discouraged by the process. However, when new space is required, it must be justified by the academic and workforce training needs, accessibility for our campuses, and space for a growing student enrollment. And then there are cases where these older, inflexible buildings simply are not feasible to remodel to meet today's safety, air quality, and technology requirements. One of the things that we look at is the space use in determining criteria for new space, and believing that the efficient use of existing campus space is an important measure in that process. Now, you have heard that some of our campuses have a surplus of space. You can see that on this slide. The very light squares that you see there indicate surpluses. And most of those occur in the rural areas out in outstate Minnesota. You can also see campuses that would have deficits of academic space, most of which are occurring in the population growth areas of the state. This slide addresses what is known as assignable square feet. That's the amount of space that's actually used by students in classrooms and laboratories. If you look particularly at the campuses in this year's budgets that have deficits of space, those are campuses with shortages of space, whether requesting remodeling or new construction funds, they appear as the downward bars or negative bars below the zero line. You can see that the focus for new space and remodeling is on those places, those campuses that have a deficit of space. Campuses that are included in this year's budget, shown above the line, are those with a surplus of space, most of which are planned for remodeling. Only a few places show locations, few locations show new space where the programmatic needs are the driving force. Another way to look at this is the final outcome in what you might call a space program. I'm trying to think of a rover joke, but I can't. The slide depicts the space emphasis in this year's budget request. Here again, you see the major major emphasis on the sciences and technology, applied laboratories, classrooms, and student services. Through the process, we also recommend to you funding in several ways based on the optimum use of capital bonding funds. Some projects in the first line, the first bar, horizontal line, some projects request only design funds where construction can appropriately follow in 2006. Some projects are so well defined and perhaps even have an architect under contract where the total of design and construction is requested this year, where we can anticipate timely project execution in 04 and 05. Some projects, the third line, third horizontal line, may be proposed in a phased manner in that design would come first, followed by new construction, followed by remodeling, perhaps over a three-biennial period. There are some other pieces to the capital budget. Projects at five campuses, we are requesting only design money to get their projects started this year, anticipating requests for funding for construction in 06. We have an initiative this year to demolish obsolete space at 10 campuses, proposed for $1.6 million, and land acquisition at $2 million is also requested. I'll discuss both the demolition and the land acquisition in a little bit more detail in a moment. We strive to balance the program where the students are located. And as you can see, the budget is fairly distributed over the state. This will vary year by year depending on the actual mix of design versus construction versus what is actually appropriated. Another way to look at it, I believe the Chancellor mentioned this in his opening remarks, is that the dollars also follow the population. This reflects the investment in the state's population centers and the growth areas along the I-94 corridor, Duluth, Brandon, and Bemidji areas, and in the southeast. So we can sum the budget up this way, $105 million in capital renewal, line item projects, $60 million in new investment, also line item projects, land acquisition, demolition, design for 06, and HEPA totaling $274.9 million. By way of history, this slide depicts capital appropriations since 98. You can see the $143 million in 98. I combined both 202 and 03 because the 03 bill was essentially the reinstatement of the vetoes from 02. And finally, projects and priorities, which I could refer you to the bonding book on page number one, which has a list of each project in its ranked priority. Priority one remains, as it has in the last two budget requests, higher education asset and preservation funds. Priorities two through nine are projects that have been phased, have been funded in the past, and with complete construction in this budget cycle. Priorities 10 through 15 are system initiatives, projects which I'll describe in a moment that request money, a small amount of remodeling money at a variety of campuses statewide. Project 16 through 20, complete projects that were funded for design in prior years. And beginning with priority, project number 21, priority number 21 are new projects that have not
not been on the board before. Mr. Chair, that completes the overview. At this point, I would like to now propose, I would like to now go and address several of the projects on the list that are system related, the HEPA request, followed by the five system initiatives, and then conclude with the Riverland project, since we're here in Austin today.
Representative Nelson had a question.
Yes, I had a question, and it involves the difference between the line item projects and the HEPA projects. And I noticed that you said that the line item projects on Main Street include one through debt service on those. But what about the HEPA projects? What type of debt service and how is it paid for as far as institution or ministry on the HEPA projects?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, the HEPA projects do not have debt service assigned to the system. So the debt service is covered by the state through the state.
So 100% of the 100%, debt service
right.
Is covered
yes.
by the state.
Right.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
The discussion of the HEPA request begins on page 4 of the bonding book. If you care to follow along in that, page 4 and 5 show how the $100 million would be proposed to be allocated among the colleges and universities of the system. HEPA has been, since merger, a major focus of our capital budget process. It is the major source of funds for those unglamorous, yet vitally critical repair and replacement projects. And it's through this program that we're able to replace roofs, boilers, chillers, and other infrastructure components of our campuses, comply with building code, air quality, ADA requirements, and in general keep our campuses safe, warm, and dry.
Just another quick question. Now, are these projects listed by priority?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, they are listed within the campus by priority, but not in this list.
Well, they're alphabetical here, but I mean, is there something in our booklet or that we would have available that would show the prioritizing the HEPA projects? I assume, for example, and we've had these kinds of discussions in the past, that leaky roofs would be near the top. At one time, one of the systems before merger didn't have them near the top, interestingly enough. But I assume somewhere we would be able to see then what the priorities are within the HEPA request.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, you'll be receiving this week our annual report of HEPA project execution and also our list for this request. Within that list, you will see each campus and each campus priorities within the campus. So we prioritize based on the president's recommendations to us within each campus, but we do not prioritize the entire list as we do the line item project list.
One of the reasons I raised that question, from my perspective, I hope that we're able to fund the whole list. Sometimes historically that hasn't happened, and so at some point you're going to have to confront the question then, not only what are the priorities within a campus, but what are the priorities system-wide, and that's why I raised the question. I would assume that leaky roofs would percolate to the top, and something like a boiler would probably be near the top as it was at risk of failure, knowing what our Minnesota winters are like and so on. So that's why I raised the question. It would be interesting to see what the system-wide priorities are at some point as we go through the process.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I think you will see when the list is transmitted to you that the top priorities across the board, campus by campus, are things like roofs and boilers and chillers, things that are worn out, failing, leaking, things of that nature. As history will tell us, sometimes we have to trim back on that HEPR, on the overall HEPR requirement, and as we do that, we look very carefully at those issues to be sure that in allocating whatever the final amount is, that we do in fact address those critical items.
Thank you.
To follow up on that, just so I'm clear, so you're saying based on the history of funding HEPR, obviously the request is often not fully granted. So is it based more on the individual project than when you have to cut back, and the value, as Representative Carlson pointed out, and some higher priority than others, or is it based on having to spread the dollars fairly throughout all of the campuses?
Mr. Chairman, we start out in the HEPR program by looking at the size of the campus and trying to be as equitable as we can, given the state of affairs at each campus. Some have higher needs than others. At $100 million, it's a fairly equitable distribution that recognizes priorities, as that $100 million, if it was reduced, you get to the point where some campuses may not get any project funded out of a HEPR program because of the requirement to fund a roof at 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 other places.
On the issue of priorities, Mr. Johnson, I'm trying to understand how you've got these ranked on the first page in your capital budget request. It appears that you've got the full HEPR request ranked as the number one priority over all of the other requests. So I don't know historically if this committee has tried to cut back on HEPR distinct from the other budget requests, but for the system's preference, and if we had to cut back on the overall capital budget request, would you prefer that we cut back on the, from the bottom, working our way up, number 32, and going up toward number one? So if we could only fund $101 million total, and still have HEPR fully funded, would that be your prioritization?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Black, that is the way the board has approved our list, as $100 million being the most important part of our program to take care of our existing resources.
Thank you.
Our request for $100 million is based on a long-term plan to reduce the backlog of deferred maintenance and to replace building components when they are due to be replaced, rather than facing leaking roofs and failed equipment. Campuses requested this year almost $200 million in the HEPR program. The $100 million proposal to you is based on our first respecting the priorities for the work as set by the individual campuses within the context of their long-range facilities planning programs and on the critical needs of facilities around the system. To repeat what I've said a couple times here, we focus heavily on maintaining the integrity of each building's envelope, that is the roof, the walls, the window systems, places where there's chances or actual places of moisture intrusion. Many of our building systems that are now facing 30 years of age do not provide adequate ventilation, control of heating and cooling, and dehumidification. The result is poor indoor air quality and lack of environmental control. And then many of our systems have simply reached or exceeded their expected life. And so the HEPR program becomes a vital piece in our being good stewards of the state's resources.
Chair Stang, just to make a point for our consideration and get Al's opinion on it. They do, the HEPR and the projects do have a relationship. And let me give an example. The Winona project, Pasteur Hall and Hagen Hall, the third one on the list, the one at Moorhead, if we were not doing a major project there, you would have HEPR needs, perhaps. So you do clean up some other problems when you do a major project. Is that a fair, please don't disagree, but is that clear?
Exactly right.
So you've eliminated the sense when you invest in those two science centers, you've eliminated some long-term maintenance problems with two old buildings.
The chancellor is absolutely correct. And in fact, in our review process, we do look at projects and encourage those projects that come in for remodeling to look beyond their immediate remodeling, to look at the roof and look at the window systems and the walls, and to try to correct the deferred maintenance as possible within a remodeling project as possible. One of the things that makes our HEPA program perhaps a little unique is that it does not generally remodel whole wings of buildings or whole buildings, but rather it focuses on a roof or a chiller or a system or a tuck point in the exterior. It's generally, as I indicated earlier, very unglamorous work, but it is work that has to be done and is certainly recognized by our students and staff once that work gets completed.
Going back to the priorities, might I ask two questions, and one is a follow-up to the chancellor's. If one of the projects that he described for one reason or another were not funded, then does the HEPA list change? Does it get longer, or does something get leapfrogged, using the example that he just gave? I assume then you would have asset preservation issues with that building that would be remodeled.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, that's absolutely right. If a remodeling project included a critical HEPA-type project, like a roof replacement, that would have to then shift to the HEPA program as opposed to in that remodeling line item project. I might also add that in the line item project for remodeling of a building, the institution is taking on the debt service responsibility for that remodeling, even though much of that work.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe on this next question, if you don't have it now, it might be interesting, at least from my perspective. On the first list here, the repair and replacement projects, you had 143 listed. I'd be interested in knowing what's just below that cut line. You know, what projects maybe 144, 145, 146, and so on, what kinds of things were not funded, being that the request you indicated was at 200 million.
Right.
I'm one that has always put a high priority on the preserving our investments. I think the committee has, quite frankly, sounds like I have a one on it. But it would be interesting, I think, from our perspective, to know what's just below that cut line and what kind of emergency kinds of things may or may not be there.
Representative Stang, Representative Carlson. We can do that. And we'll provide that for you. I believe within the 100 million, certainly the emergencies, the critical things, the must-do items are all contained, and the other items are HEPA related, certainly. But it's those that we felt in our analysis and in the priorities that the president set were those that could be continued to be carried along. But we'd be pleased to provide that additional information.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. I'm trying to get a handle on the page talking about the repair and replacement projects in HEPA on page 4. And our remodeling project, first let me say, the reason I think this is important is because from the state perspective, if the line item projects, as you mentioned, are, the state is looking at two-thirds of the volume. Debt service. And with the HEPA requests, the state's incurring 100% of the debt service. So on these HEPA requests, especially the part about the repair and the replacement, is there a way for us to know in there, or will we get some more detailed information? Are all of these type of things maintenance type things which are actually prolonging the life of the building, like you visited with, or sometimes you've used the word remodel, and I'm wondering where the remodeling fits in, if that is a line item project, or are there any remodeling listed in here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, there may be some remodeling if it's incidental to correcting a HEPA type project, such as ADA compliance is invariably a remodeling type project to do that. Installing fire sprinklers, invariably when you're installing sprinklers, you might be into the ceiling and you might be replacing the ceiling at the same time. The fact is, though, that these projects primarily are maintenance related, repair, extending the life of the facility. They are indeed, for the most part, capitalized on the financial records of the system as capital improvements or capital repairs, I should say, to the facility. And I think when you see the list later on this week, when we get that over to you, when you see the types of work, I think you'll have a better appreciation for the detail of what these things are.
I think that's what I'm looking for, is more detail on the HEPA request, because there's a more significant part of the state's involvement. I'll look to that. Thank you.
Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The HEPA program has as its foundation the statewide condition assessment that we performed in 1999 on every square foot of campus space in the state. That assessment found at the time we had a backlog of maintenance of about $500 million. Now, this wasn't a mathematical exercise, but rather it was a professional inspection by architects and engineers that examined each and every campus space. As I indicated, our campus requests totaled nearly $200 million for this year, and you can see much of that work that they requested focused on re-roofing and replacement of heating, ventilating, and air conditioning systems. And in a similar way, the $100 million allocation focuses heavily on roof replacement at $33 million, HVAC repairs and improvements and replacements at $35 million, exterior work at $7 million, fire protection improvements, $8 million, and so on.
Mr. Johnson, on that, the total request of $196 million, how much of that is still exists from us not fully funding your last HEPA request? You know what's been carried over? How far behind are we in terms of requests in the past versus problems you foresee in the future?
Well, just Mr. Chairman, just looking at the last HEPA request, we had requested $100 million and $60 million was funded in 02, and so $40 million at least of that program has been carried forward. The other significant thing to note is that even with the continued robust funding in HEPA and in our capital program, the backlog, from a mathematical perspective, the backlog has not decreased. I think that, in fact, it is probably increased somewhat. So it is not a case where this backlog continues to come down, because as time goes on, you may be approaching some of these roofs and some of these other activities that need to be fixed and replaced and renewed, but at the same time, other things are reaching the end of their life and falling into that window. So it's been a constant struggle to stay ahead, and in fact, I believe that we've actually fallen behind somewhat in the deferred maintenance overall perspective.
Perhaps when we get back into the regular session, maybe we could spend a little more time on how the process works for the campus when they do recognize a problem or have a HEPA request, how your office goes back and analyzes it and really determines how much of a cost is maybe versus what they believe the actual cost to be, and when you go in
and relook at the project and really determine it might be useful for us to see how that process works. I think we have some understanding on the regular line item projects, but the HEPA might be a little different. But we can deal with that issue down the road. Mr. Johnson, you can continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, the allocation. And then we will, I'd like to do here is shift to the what we call the system initiatives that touch on many of our campuses around the system. These are, again, these are line item projects that show up in the priorities. The science lab renovation, for example, starting as priority number 10 on page 14 of the bonding book. Now, these initiative projects are smaller capital projects that are usually in the $500,000 range. They address remodeling of existing science labs or the creation of new labs at 17 campuses. This is a functional grouping along the lines of a specific need, provides a relatively small amount of money to many campuses towards solving a strategic capital requirement. These are mostly campuses that either do not have a major capital project, or they have a project which might focus on another programmatic need, and not, in this case, not the sciences. But these particular science labs that will focus on programs in allied health, biology, nursing, pharmacy, dental, physics, agronomy, and chemistry. And details of the individual projects at the individual campuses and the descriptions are shown in the bonding book and, of course, in the detailed project sheets that you have in the capital budget system. The legislature favorably endorsed this concept that we submitted for the first time in 2002. The legislature funded $1.9 million for the renovation of science labs at six campuses, and that work is just about complete. Another system-wide initiative this year is focusing on remodeling of 61,000 square feet of space at 14 campuses to address specific program needs directly supporting workforce training. Spaces here will be remodeled for plumbing technology, nursing, robotics, fluid power, biomedical equipment maintenance, construction electricity, automotive technology, photo technology, and veterinary science. So these are remodelings that go to other types of workforce training needs. The project also provides a structural concrete pad to safely support and allow the taxiing of a donated aircraft to the aviation programs at Northland College at Thief River Falls. Another system-wide initiative new this year would remodel 94,000 square feet at 12 campuses to upgrade technology applications. These are often called smart classrooms. The spaces would allow for technology to enhance the basic academic environment. Some of these classrooms are the barest of classrooms right now with simple chairs and tables. This initiative would upgrade the classroom space, the lighting, the acoustics, and other support issues to allow the installation of modern and enhanced technology systems. Another system-wide initiative it's priority number 13 on page 17 of your handout. This initiative allows us to focus specifically on demolishing obsolete campus buildings and spaces at 10 separate locations. It'll take away deferred maintenance and the need to maintain unnecessary space. And since the facilities are not being replaced, we're requesting that this initiative be considered for funding by either cash from the general fund or by general obligation bonds without debt service assigned to the system.
Another initiative this year for $2 million will enable closure of a program at one campus location while shifting it to another location where that program is in higher demand or where a more robust program exists. This initiative would provide remodeling funds for the gaining campus to enhance its spaces and its program, and in some cases, remodeling funds to the closing campus to improve the existing space. A couple of examples here would be the closing of a machine tool program at Century College and relocating the resources for that program to Anoka Technical College. Closing of the taxidermy program at Pine Technical College and transferring resources to Vermilion Community College in Ely. The final system initiative is for land acquisition, and the request is for $2 million. Colleges and universities often have opportunities to acquire land that is adjacent to the campuses from willing sellers. The property serves either as a buffer for the campus from neighborhood expansion from the outside or as expansion space for campuses that are growing. In most cases, these land opportunities come up on short notice, and then having a pool of capital dollars available provides the flexibility to gain the needed property as it becomes available. All property acquisitions are approved by the Board of Trustees and reported to the legislature as they occur if they're funded by a capital appropriation such as this. Some examples in this current program are Pine Technical College, Ridgewater College at Hutchinson, St. Cloud State University, and Winona State University.
President Carlson.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but I didn't back on 14 yet, where you're closing the reopening programs. How do you determine, for example, being that you referenced Century College, that the program goes from Century to Anoka, as opposed to going from Anoka to Century?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, the consolidation initiative is in fact initiated by the two campus presidents and a discussion between the campus that wishes to close a program and dealing with another campus that is receptive to expanding or opening a program. Both campuses come forward together and propose the consolidation, and if it makes sense to us both from an academic perspective as well as a facilities perspective, then we've brought those forward as a capital proposal.
The reason I raised the question, sitting here with Hoff really looking at the facility, I'm not sure. I assume then that the facility is a better facility, or more students are located closer to Anoka than to Century. I'm just curious what goes into a decision like that, because you've got nice labs in both facilities. I suspect then it's 6-1 of a half dozen of another in terms of which one is closed and which one remains open. But
I think we have someone here that's
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson. For the record, I'm Leslie Mercer, Associate Vice Chancellor of the System Office. It is a facilities issue, but it's also an academic issue, and we do look at things like where the graduates are coming from, what the graduation is of the programs, what the enrollments are, what the mix of the programs are with the institution, and whether that particular program is something that fits with other institutions. And so in the case that you're describing, that program fit much better with the program that was already a good, strong program at Anoka, had a lot of enrollment, had good placement rates. Century's was not as strong, and it was a mutual decision of those two institutions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since we're guests of Riverland Community College this afternoon, I'd like to jump to their project, is number 27 in your handout, and ask Dr. Lees to join me. It's on page 30 in the bonding book. At the next hearing in Century, we'll be going over line item by line item, similar to this this presentation for each individual project. But for Riverland Community College, this project will remodel 18,000 square feet of space here at the Austin campus for the sciences. Wet laboratories for chemistry and biology will be relocated and upgraded to current standards at the West Campus, while the existing labs in the East Campus will be remodeled for dry laboratories for physics and science and an additional classroom space. I'd like to ask Dr. Lees if he'd like to comment on his project, or specifically the need for sciences and science lab upgrades in general.
Dr. Lees, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The project for Riverland Community College affects two campuses. It does not require any new construction. It improves the efficiency and effectiveness of existing facility. It meets a growing demand for science courses. For example, in Albert Lea, it's a relatively small community. We are told by officials of Albert Lea Medical Center that within the next 24 months, they will need 60 new nurses. In the next 5 years, they will need 200 nurses. And that's just Albert Lea. There's a huge demand from students who want science courses when they want to transfer to the four-year universities, who are requiring that students satisfy distribution requirements in the sciences. So we see this as a real opportunity to meet growing enrollments. We also see it as a way of providing an educated workforce in the allied health fields. For example, Mayo has a bus that transports employees from the Austin area to Rochester each day. And there's a growing demand for services, and we just don't have the capacity to provide that. The other importance of this project is that it's a health and safety issue for students and faculty. The air handling, for example, in these buildings is inadequate. It was never designed for contemporary standards. We have asbestos that is used to line or insulate our cabinetry in some of our labs. So there are health issues as well. Then we also, because of the age of the facilities, do not comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so we have students, for example, in wheelchairs, where they would be working with dangerous chemicals in a chemistry lab at eye level because there's no facility that is appropriate for their accommodation. So enrollment growth, safety and health issues, access issues for those with disabilities, these are all underlying rationale for this project. Are there any questions?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick one. One of the issues that some members may remember when we dealt with the nursing question was, in part, the University of Minnesota was involved with the discussion, was the availability of nursing educators, and we tried to address the nursing shortage, and it's pretty acute. We had a hearing 4 years ago, at Mayo, where they were expressing their concerns. And the question is, in essence, and I'm glad to see, listening to industry, that you're trying to address that here, the facilities, but how are you doing in terms of hiring staff then? Or is another way of putting it, is the potential there to get enough staff to teach the courses?
At least.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, yes, we are working with the three medical communities here in Austin, Albert Lea, and Owatonna, and have just recently negotiated an agreement with the three facilities to provide us with additional funding that we can use for personnel costs related to our nursing program to help us hire additional personnel. In addition, we're working with the two medical clinics and the hospital with the use of their personnel who are qualified to teach at the community college level so that we can take advantage of the professional expertise that they have on staff.
President Carlson, Chair.
The second part of your answer was the one I was looking for, the availability of staff. If you're comfortable with your expansion, that you'll be able to meet that then.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson, I think you raised an interesting point about this discussion, especially as we look at southern Minnesota. There's a large demand for new science labs, much of it linked to the nursing. And I think that issue is going to be brought up again as far as, you know, that we have the labs, the building of labs, are we going to have the instructors that, you know, teach the students in those labs? So it's all tied together. But I do believe that issue will keep resurfacing as we move through this next session. Thank you, Dr. Lisa. Chancellor McCormick, did you want to
chair? I just want to kind of review, there's some new members, but last year we did present during the operating budget proposal a program where we produced 300 to help with this 3,000 short of producing 300 additional nurses. That program included in there a program at our universities to produce master's level nursing instructors that would help deliver, and this committee, as you remember, I'm sure well, approved it favorably and recommended it. It didn't emerge at the end, but we look forward to a continuing discussion not only about delivering the nurses, but getting the infrastructure, human infrastructure, ready to be able to do that.
Dr. Lees, you can continue if you have further testimony on projects.
No, at this time, I'm.
Thank you.
Unless there are other questions.
No. Mr. Johnson,
I have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That concludes our remarks for today. When you convene at Century College next week, we'll have a brief, very brief overview, and then go right into the individual projects, marching right down the priority list.
Open it up for questions. I have a few of other representatives.
Oh,
no, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First question, back to the recent demolition. Are we in a situation where if we don't do the demolition, we would be paying costs to mothball some of those facilities so that we actually are in a situation where we're spending money one way or another way?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dorn, it varies from location to location, but many of these sites are buildings that are in use and should be closed, could be closed. Some of them are less than safe. And so, yes, I'd say in general, if you are paying costs to keep them warm and dry, because there is no, there are no funds to demolish them. So, in general, we would, for this relative investment of $1.6 million, we would take away a considerable amount of not only deferred maintenance, but also operating costs.
Mr.
Chairman, if I might, as someone in the same vein, but with a lot broader perspective, I've been trying to track through the document some specifics in terms of whatever collaboration or partnerships are occurring throughout some projects, and maybe Mr. Chairman Johnson, some of this will come out at the next hearing as we get into more detail. I did notice, I think it was priorities number 16, there was a dollar figure of some private involvement in
whatever that project was. Is there a place where we will see the extent of private collaboration dollars with some of these projects? I saw many of the documents, but I didn't see dollar amounts, and I know at times, you know, the projects in the past, we are in a situation where we also have dollars for leveraging, but that if we don't move forward, we don't leverage those dollars. So that we begin one of those situations where not inaction has a cost put as low as that. And I wonder if there was more detail available to me and what might be shed on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorn, I believe in as we go project by project, we'll highlight that for you. It's already contained in the more detailed project narratives, but as we go through the program next week, we'll be sure to highlight that.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Chair Stang. I have a question going back to your project scoring process, and just was wondering, the life safety building code fire, does that include ADA, you know, the accessibility of labs and so forth on campuses?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, it does in the evaluation process for a remodeling project, those issues come out as overall as part of the justification for a project.
And then, Dr. Lees, I have a question. When was the last time that your labs here were updated for renovated?
Dr. Lees. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, to my knowledge, the science laboratories at Austin Everly have not been updated since they were originally built in the late 1960s.
So these are the same labs that Representative Anderson is on there.
Mr. Chairman, I think you saw my name carved in one of the tables. Oh, I didn't do it.
We thought it was carved with that heap of money.
Representative Nelson, did you have a question?
Well, I did a little bit on the space analysis. I'll study this more, but I'm just curious, how did you arrive at that space analysis number? That's a real interesting number, and it'd be good to kind of understand the parameters of how you were able to determine how much space there is in deficit or how much extra space there is at individual institutions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the space analysis was done several years ago as a system-wide study. We had a consultant that does this sort of thing nationwide, and it is essentially a study that's made up of determining the size of different classrooms and laboratories, the numbers of students that use those spaces, the hours that the courses are given. I think those are the three fundamental pieces of it. And then it's through an algorithm of determining how much square feet per student, assignable square feet, you eventually then can come up with a space deficit or a space surplus. And we have a copy of that report, and we'll make a copy of that available to you. And I'd be happy to discuss that with you because it's a fairly laborious report.
In regards to that, what type of plan do you have for the campuses where there is surplus? When we talk about the renovation and remodeling, probably more specifically on campuses that need additional space, but what type of long-range plan do you have for those campuses with surpluses?
Mr. Chairman, for those places that have surplus, one of the first things we look at, of course, is in dealing with the campus administrations is to try to assist them in determining how to use that surplus space to be more efficient. Sometimes it's a matter of having data and showing, working with campuses on how either class hours can be arranged or perhaps remodeling could take place within existing space to turn some unused space into classrooms, if there are classroom deficits, but office space surpluses, or if there are vice versa, if there are laboratory, not, if there are laboratory deficits, but classroom surpluses, where remodeling can change the complexion of that. The other important thing to look at is not to encourage or in fact discourage addition of new space in places where there are surpluses. Unless you can show, as we have in a couple of these projects, where you're dealing with a programmatic need, such as at Central Lakes College, where the new construction, the new square footage is specifically for the heavy equipment programs, and where existing space is not adaptable for heavy pieces of road construction equipment.
With that, the campuses where there is this great space deficit, I know while we visited some of those projects, they indicated that even with the projects that they have requested, if they're granted those dollars, they still are anticipating a continued deficit of space. Is that correct? I have a couple other questions. If Representative Weiss,
whatever you want.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to follow up a little bit on Dr. Lisa's presentation in the nursing program and Chancellor McCormick's comments, because it puts, this is my first time through a capital budget process, but it links for me this process with the budget process we went through last spring. I guess we're seeing in part the consequences of the massive funding cuts that were forced by the House majority last spring and the governor, and the short and long-term ripple effect in local communities that have a need for nurses but aren't finding the funding or the facilities to be able to teach and train those nurses or educate those nurses. I'm encouraged that Dr. Lisa, you're turning to other private sources to try to help close that gap. It just seemed to me that it's more appropriately borne by a broader group of people, the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota as a whole, because this is not the only region where this is an issue. It ends up diffusing the costs, but the costs are nonetheless borne by the community in one way or another. Every time you have a healthcare facility supplying a nurse from their staff at their cost, it comes out of their budget, and those costs are passed on to private insurance companies that are insuring employers in the area, or private employers that are self-insured, or the taxpayers of Minnesota when they're picking up the cost for MinCare and other coverage for people who don't have insurance through their employers. So either way, we all pay, and either that or we don't get the level of health care or nursing coverage that we would like if we're sitting in a bed in the hospital. We might have to wait longer than we otherwise would want to for a response to our medical needs. Or even worse, and probably a real concern for a rural community or a community in greater Minnesota, is that people that might otherwise be interested in going into the field of nursing might leave these communities in search of educational opportunities elsewhere to pursue their chosen field of interest. So I guess I'm starting to piece together the links between the budget process over the biennium, almost $200 million in cuts to Minsky in the budget process, and what we're looking at here in terms of the capital funding process as well.
Thank you, Representative Lutz. My guess is that regardless of the budget cuts, I imagine most of these projects probably would have been the same this year, whether we had reduced the budget last year or increased the budget. If you look, looking at the science labs, curing some of those projects, it seemed like the needs have been there for a number of years, that now we're just finally becoming aware of how important it is to invest in some of those projects, which brings me to a question I have. I've been contacted by a number of business people, the Hospital Association, in support for a lot of these projects. How is MinSkew incorporating their support, the business community support? I know looking at St. Cloud's Technical College project with the Workforce Center, and how many of these projects are tied to our business community directly. How is MinSkew using that importance or that link to further
the push or the support to get these projects funded. How is that going to be partnered this session? I don't know, Chancellor McCormick, if you want to respond to that.
Sure, thank you. Glad to comment on that. First of all, as some of you will remember, when we made the joint presentation, the nursing leadership of the state was very much with us as we made the presentation and pointed to the shortages, not only currently, but the fact that the age cohort of the nurses has increased quite a bit, which means that we're going to have a lot of retirements in the near future. So there was a lot of collaboration there. We also have been in discussion with the hospital leaders, and we're doing that in several ways. Through our healthcare discussion, we have ongoing groups, but in some efforts of this fall, we've actually been going out and we've been meeting with the business community, the community leaders, chamber, and others all over Minnesota. And in every one of those groups, we tend to have the hospital administrators and others. And we've been taking that input. And you remember the one we had at Albert Lea, where the hospital administrator was there, talked about the needs. And what we're looking forward to doing as we come forward in the coming months with our appropriations request, the operating budget, we'll look to have some broader constituency support for the agenda. And in many of these discussions, the hope was, I remember Joe at Central Lakes, where we had your leadership, that what we want to do is we discuss our priority needs. We want to go back to that community again, test them one more time with the president to see if we're on course, and then ask them to join us in the advocacy for the programs in the budget. So we're doing a lot more. We also need to acknowledge the fact that we need to be more aggressive in looking for partnerships, for cooperative ventures. And I can tell you, just to point it to this community, that over at Albert Lea, we have the hospital leadership there working with us on getting equipment. And I think we've got some kind of arrangement where when they replace the latest, but not the newest, we get it, and our older equipment is turned in. So we know that we need to look for some collaborators. We also are very encouraged. One of the problems in nursing is that even if you do the programs, you need the sites for them to get the experience that they need. And I'm sensing a willingness to work together so that it won't all fall on appropriation or tuition, but look for the partnerships. And by the way, as we've been listening to the business community, I think we can do a better job and need to in looking for ways to business to make contributions to the organization to help get a specific objective. So we hope that as we come before you in the coming months, that we'll have a broad coalition of support on healthcare, perhaps a couple of other areas that are very important.
I've got a couple of categories, but I did want to do a follow-up on the nursing. Reminds me of last session, nursing seems to be high priority because of the exposure we've gotten to the nursing shortage. When I look at the requests, as the chair just pointed out, a lot of the requests deal with science labs and so on. So one question would be, we're remodeling, and I assume that those are needed remodelings to make sure our labs are current. But what part of all of this will actually expand the output of nurses so that we're beginning to address the nursing shortage? In other words, what part is better facilities for the status quo in terms of graduation, and what part of this, if any, would be an actual expansion? I know some of it apparently is because testimony from Riverland was that
the staff helped to add it or correct, but I think we're a number of cases. Now, in the case of the labs in this facility, they are 19, 30 years ago, and some say should be kept for a museum of how it used to be, because they really need to be replaced. That probably have a lot to do with getting them right, the kind of people that we need to prepare. But I think we're actually adding laboratories at some of the places. Leslie or Al, can you speak to that?
What about Mr. Chairman, that's essentially my question, what we're doing to expand the actual number of graduates across the state with this initiative.
Mr. Chair, I represent Carlson. We are
adding labs to better address the nursing shortfall issue. one of the questions that we have internally that we're working to get to you for this session is exactly what will this capital program produce? Will it be able to produce additional output? And that's something that we will be getting to you here in the course of this session.
Now, just to connect, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to connect last year's request, your point, with where we're going. We came before you, and we didn't ask for the money in the base. We said, give us a line item over a three-year period, and we will promise to increase our capacity by 300. And I would say that pretty carefully, these facility upgrades, the ones we did last session, are all related to increasing our capacity. But in order to do that, and I think the presidents are here, and I want to make sure that you're being supportive, we will need additional appropriations to be able to hire the faculty and to add the students. So it will be both a facility upgrade and also adding more capacity to add more additional people to the program. I think that we have cases, I mean, I know we do at Inver Hills, but I've been just talking to that president recently, where we have the students lined up. We've got the students, the jobs are out there, we can't increase the instructional capacity to be able to turn them out. And so in our future proposals, we'll be talking about increasing that capacity. And we were willing, we were asking you to consider holding us very accountable for using the money to get the results and actually increase the numbers. So it will be two areas. One, increasing the quality and the preparation through modern labs, but also we've got a capacity problem and we need to add hundreds of new nurses. And while we're talking about nursing, it's more than nursing. It is the allied health professions. It is a broad area. And of course, Minnesota State College universities, we have traditionally been the supplier of 70 or 80% of these individuals in the state of Minnesota. So we're your primary provider, and we look forward to joining with you as we try to solve that problem.
Trustee Holmes, then,
Representative Carlson, that may even be a deceptive question and answer as you proceed through the process. I recently visited a campus, and I don't believe it. The remodeling is in this request because it's so recently the staff added a lab for nursing, and they were very proud of the fact that I believe the cots came from the local loan closet. They donated their file cabinets from staff, and they were just finishing repainting them, creating a lab where the sinks were next door. And it's now called a lab, nursing lab, at that campus. So next year, or next time around, it will show up as a remodeling of a lab. It was a classroom. So is that an expansion? They're producing more people because of that staff dedication. And I think some things are happening. As I stated early on, one of the priorities that the board set was healthcare and science in these projects because of the needs of our citizens in the state.
Mr. Chairman, you make a good point, and that is essentially what I was asking. You know, what part of this is just to make sure we've got state-of-the-art facilities so we don't have a lot of makeshift labs. But the second part of that being a big part of our discussion during the appropriations process last year was what we could do to address the nursing shortage, and hence my question. And bottom line, are we going to have, when all is said and done, adequate facilities to expand the capacity relative to, and the Chancellor's point is well taken, allied health, we seem to focus on nursing, that's been the high priority, but yeah, obviously it's more than just nursing that needs to be talked about.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a couple of other questions, but they're not necessarily at Riverland or nursing, so
I went to that point for a little bit. With the
priority number 10 is system-wide science lab renovations, 0.9 million. How much of that, those are renovating, creating new labs, how much of that will prevent existing space, or what types of things we're taking into consideration and putting that list together?
Mr. Chairman, I think to give you a better picture of that, I'd do a little bit of study and maybe in order to portray it.
The other point of information would be useful is to know what the actual expense is for each of them. I think I've seen the list before, broken down dollar for dollar for some of these system-wide expenditure by campus, if we can get that information.
Yes, we have that every day.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, my next question wasn't dealing with one of the projects directly, so if you want me to wait.
I don't, there's no other questions.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then, and maybe this then would be of the Chancellor or someone that would designate, but if you calculated if your full request is granted, what the tuition implications would be with the one-third debt service. Maybe the person to your left is the one you want to.
Chair, staying in the cost, you want us to get that ready for the next hearing, that issue, would you like us to take a stab at it now?
If you have it now, that would be fine. If you want to, we have another hearing coming up fairly soon, so either forum would be fine from my perspective.
We'll get that information next.
Chairman, then the other question that I have, and I don't know if anybody is here. I think somebody is here from the Department of Finance. Yeah. Kind of getting behind the Chancellor there. What I was interested in finding out, and maybe our own staff could answer this as well, what we had as a result of last year's budget available for debt service, which drives the size of a potential bonding bill, at least as we've appropriated dollars to date. So if Mr. Berg or Finance could answer that question. And then the other question I have, which is related to that, we have the self-imposed 3% limit and how close we are to the 3% limit. That constantly changes because we're continually paying off bonds. But those are some of the big picture items, and I know the governor has been announcing various projects, so we have a pretty strong signal that the governor's office is going to be coming forward with a number of initiatives outside of higher education. That's another reason that I asked that question. You know, this morning's paper had reference to 30-some million, for example, for the zoo. And apparently with the governor's announcement, that will be in the governor's proposal. So that's the question, how much will we have available with what we've set aside for debt service for a bonding bill, how big a bill, in other words, can we fund? And secondly, the 3% limit. So whoever could address that.
Not exactly. The November forecast, maybe Ms. Johnson knows the exact number. The November revenue forecast had room for an 800 and, I want to say, about 50, 30? $30 million worth of bonding. That's our capacity.
Ms. Johnson, did you want to?
You
could actually stay there.
I think that's roughly right. I don't have the exact number, but I can certainly get that for you. One thing to just sort of clarify is that in the February forecast, or excuse me, the November forecast, the debt service that was allocated, as you know, we have to make an estimate, was for a $530 million bonding bill. And so any bill above that amount, even if it's not the maximum that we can allow would have to be paid for as well. But I don't have the exact number. I think it is roughly 850 million, but I'll be
could I ask for a clarification? I'm not sure I tracked all of that, the difference between the 830 and the 530. follow the November forecast, where does the 8:30 come into play?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Council, the 8:30 or 50, wherever we're getting, is the capacity that we have under our state bond rating and where the budget, it's more related to the question you were asking about the 3% of how much can the state bond for debt service payment aside. The 500 sum that Ms. Johnston was mentioning is the amount that finance has figured in with the dollars for payment, repayment of the debt. So the difference between those two, what she was trying to impart is, we could go up that additional amount. We would have to cut some money loose in the operating budget to cover debt service in this biennium.
Yeah, I'm sure that explains it then. It wasn't clear to me that the 830 or 850 or whatever was the 3% that I'd asked about. So then the forecast would generate the 530. So unless something changes in February or we were to do something else with the budget, right now, for conversation purposes, I guess we can talk about 530. For all of state government, I think that's what we have to keep in mind. And then whatever percentage of 530 ends up being available for higher education. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, as a related issue, one of the items that I mentioned briefly, but one of the things that we look at in evaluating projects is our debt service capacity. And how it looks around the system, and we're running at about 2.5% for the next 20 years if we continue this level of bonding requests. So in looking at debt service as an expense at each institution and at the Office of the Chancellor, our total debt service is just a slightly above 2.5% of our revenue.
Any other questions? None. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Some housekeeping notes. We will be meeting the next two Tuesdays. And next week we're at Century College. The following Tuesday we'll be at the University of Minnesota for their testimony. Our committee budget was, we were given our committee budget essentially at the last rules committee in December. So if members are interested in feel the need to tour any of the projects or visit any of the campuses to get better understanding, we will reimburse members for those expenses. The slips are not put in your folder today, but we certainly will reimburse members for the expenses today as well. So if you are interested in the next couple of weeks to review or to tour any of the campuses, please feel free to do that. With that, we have the minutes to approve from the last meeting. Representative Anderson, will you move the minutes?
Yes, I move minutes. Sure.
Any additions or corrections to the minutes? And if you remember that meeting.
Sure. Can we change any of the votes from that?
Let's see. Seeing none, all those in favor, the adoption indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Most available votes are adopted. See no other questions?
Yeah.